Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Dozens missing, hundreds of homes destroyed, and thousands still without heat or water. I'm Tyler Matheson, in for Shepard Smith, and this is the news on CNBC.
Searching for survivors after deadly tornadoes ripped through the Midwest.
But we just came out of a pandemic than this, so it's just unreal. It's unreal.
Entire towns destroyed, lives uprooted.
Whatever they need, when they need it.
The death toll still rising.
Of the ones that we know, the age range is 5 months to 86 years.
We're on the ground as families dig out from under the rubble. Live this hour, a critical vote against Mark Meadows after a bombshell revelation about an email sent by the former White House chief of staff one day before the attack on the Capitol. A grim pandemic milestone. COVID deaths surpass 800,000 in the U.S. as the U.K. offers a warning from across the pond. Why that country is preparing for a tidal wave of infections. Cracking down on guns by mimicking the Texas abortion law. The governor of California's plan to allow citizens to sue manufacturers of assault-style weapons. The new security alert being exploited by hackers. Vice President Harris unveils a national EV charging plan. And birds aren't real inside the growing anti-conspiracy movement.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening and welcome, everyone. Americans in the Midwest are cleaning up tonight, some still waiting to hear from their loved ones who were missing after catastrophic twisters tore through six states this past weekend. The governor of Kentucky says at least 74 people have died in the state, and he expects that number to rise. More than 100 people unaccounted for there. At least 14 people are dead in four other states, Illinois, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Missouri. The clusters of twisters hitting Friday night, the path of destruction more than 200 miles long, according to an emergency official in Kentucky. That distance yet to be confirmed by the National Weather Service, but it could be one of the longest trails in U.S. history. This is what Mayfield, Kentucky, one of the hardest hit areas, looks like today. Homes flattened, entire neighborhoods gone. At least 8 people died in a candle factory that was completely destroyed there. Here's a satellite look at the before and after of that factory. 4 workers told NBC News that some workers asked to go home during the storm when they heard warning sirens, but they say supervisors threatened to fire them if they left their shifts early. Workers say they were trapped under the debris for hours. One woman recorded herself speaking to the camera during those terrifying moments.
My foot is stuck.
Dakota.
Like I'm stuck underneath this water. Y'all see this?
Dakota.
But, and I'm really scared. I'm trying to be cool, y'all, but I'm really, really scared because where I'm at, I'm like stuck on underneath the wall, so like I'll be the last person to get out. But I know I'm gonna be okay.
We have team coverage tonight. NBC's Megan Fitzgerald is live in Edwardsville, Illinois, where a tornado hit an Amazon facility. Meteorologist Bill Karens with what we know about these historic tornadoes. But first, CNBC's Perry Russum is live in Mayfield, Kentucky. Perry?
Tyler, we have seen cars flipped over. We have seen homes that are cut in half. And then there is this bus that somehow got here. This is the fire station was the fire station. The roof of this bus is bent. The windows are shattered. The bus depot, 2 blocks away.
There are front steps leading nowhere, homes tilting toward collapse.
On a 1 to 10, it was a 30.
Stephen Beasley and his grandmother Joyce were laying in their hallway when the tornado hit. They were under couch cushions, praying.
Stephen was holding my hand so tight, you know, but God was listening because we still here, you know.
Joyce knows a woman who died at the Hill. Stephen's friend's son was killed. He was 3.
I just know her house was real old. She said it was real old, and it just collapsed.
Their church is a pile of bricks.
This is the area that I grew up in. This is obviously my church that I grew up in.
In Fairview Baptist front yard, Ricky Murphy is giving away food and clothes.
I don't think that people really understand the devastation of what we're seeing or what's happening. Everybody's just in a let's help mode.
Across the street is the volunteer firehouse.
It's just, it's all gone. Everything is gone. It's just surreal.
3 of their trucks are destroyed. A farmer is donating a building. Another fire department is lending equipment.
How do we get back to normal?
Do you think normal is achievable?
It is. The resiliency of this community and the people, it will be here faster than what we think.
This is Mayfield's water tower. It stood 250 feet in the air. The tornado ripped it out of its foundation, tossing it to the ground.
All of a sudden, I just started hearing a train coming around the house, and so I just ran downstairs with the kids and we started praying.
Jade Dillon was at home with her 5 kids.
And I walked outside and it was like we were living in hell.
Jade's sister Beth lives across the street. Part of her roof is gone, but she's staying. She can't leave her 14-year-old dog behind. Molly is blind and deaf.
How long do you plan on staying here?
As long as we can. We're alive, then we still have walls.
Water is out, power is out, 3 days since this storm, and they are still clearing the roads. Families are going to a nearby school to shower and get some food. Tyler.
Perry, thank you very much. Inconceivable images there. Meanwhile, in Illinois, the governor issued a disaster proclamation today. In Edwardsville, just east of St. Louis, Missouri, a tornado tore through an Amazon facility. The governor said 6 people inside that facility died. Here's what it looked like before and after the tornado hit. Split almost right down the middle. Workers on one side survived. An Amazon executive said today that everybody followed the correct procedures and praised the heroic actions of workers in the facility.
The thing that I kind of want to emphasize is just the heroic nature of all 46 people that were in the building. I mean, they definitely saved lives. We're going to keep investing and we'll keep seeing, can we get better, what we could have done differently. But it was unbelievable, the amount of heroic nature that happened that night.
NBC's Megan Fitzgerald is live tonight in Edwardsville. Megan?
Well, Tyler, OSHA said earlier today that they are investigating after 6 people lost their lives inside this Amazon warehouse behind me here. They are checking to make sure that Amazon followed all of their guidelines as it relates to the health and safety of employees. And tonight, Amazon saying that they did everything right, that there were sirens and alarms that were ringing in the minutes leading up to this tornado, that they notified drivers on the road of the dangers, that inside the facility, they told all 46 employees to shelter in place in the northern or southern end of the building. But just around 8:30 on Friday, that tornado ripped through the southern end of the facility, killing 6 employees. We know tonight their ages range from 26 years old to 62 years old, including 2 veterans. One of them was 46-year-old Larry Verdon. His family tonight remembering his life.
He was our hero. Anybody that knew him could tell you that whatever you needed, whether it was the shirt off his back or just, you know, somebody to scream at when everything was going wrong, he was that person.
Now, Amazon says they are investigating this incident as well, and they are providing assistance to families and paid leave for employees. Tyler.
Megan, thank you very much. Well, tornadoes in December are not unheard of by any means. There are records of twisters hitting this time of year as far back as the 1940s and 50s, and some in just the past 10 years. But forecasters say none of those previous outbreaks were this violent or deadly. Meteorologist Bill Caron's live with us now. Bill, I know they're still trying to work out the intensity, but there's a chance that this series of storms breaks some records in terms of power and path.
Yeah, without a doubt, Tyler. I mean, we're still getting the numbers in. We've already had 26 confirmed tornadoes, and we know that at least five of them have been what we consider EF5 tornadoes, and I'll explain that to you in a second. But the first thing, the big thing that just stands out is the number of fatalities that we had when the governor came out this afternoon in Kentucky and said that they have 74 fatalities. This makes this tornado the second deadliest in Kentucky history already. And with dozens more missing, we know this is going to go up to number one eventually. And look at the years. Not only were they in the springtime, but we're 1890, 1917, 1917, and 1925. So in the modern era where we have technology to warn us, this is an incredibly high number of fatalities, and it's not like this was a surprise. They had about a 25-minute lead time in the Mayfield area when that tornado came through. Now, as far as the Fujita scale goes, that EF3 that hit the Amazon facility, that had 165-mile-per-hour winds, but we didn't see any EF4, EF5s. As you said, we're waiting for that survey to come back from the Paducah National Weather Service, which covers the Mayfield area, and there is a good chance that's at least an EF4. We haven't had an EF5 in this country in 8.5 years. We'll wait and see.
Anytime there's severe weather these days, obviously there's the question of whether climate change plays a role. It's hard to say with tornadoes, right? But we have been experiencing a warmer than normal winter in many parts of the country.
Yeah, a lot of people ask you, how can we have this in December? Well, we haven't been having December weather. If you've been paying attention to the weather in the lower 48, it's been October-like warmth. I mean, it's been incredibly warm. And right before this event hit, the temperatures were in the 70s and 80s. It was 80 degrees in Memphis on Friday. The warm air was coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. It was humid. You could see all the little red icons. That's where all the tornadoes were reported. And you could see it was right where the temperatures were 25 degrees warmer than it should be this time of year. So it's not a surprise. You can get severe weather outbreaks in the fall. You know, it's just we haven't had December-type weather. And the climate change angle of this gets a little more complex. This isn't as easy to attribute this to climate change as, say, hurricane intensity or heat waves or droughts. Tornadoes are small. They're very minuscule compared to the size of a hurricane. So we don't really know if they're getting more intense or if we're getting more of them. But Tornado Alley has been changing more towards the southeast and away from Oklahoma and Texas. So that has been a trend. And we know it's warmer in winter. So at least, you know, if you do the math on this, it is possible to get more of these events in the wintertime. But at this point, the science, Tyler, does not tell us that we're seeing an increased number of tornadoes or the intensity because of climate change. This one, you know, we were very, very unlucky. It was extremely warm, and this was an intense tornado that was on the ground for at least 150 miles.
Am I right or wrong, but do tornadoes occur more often at night?
The deadly ones happen at night, and that's why you hear about them more. You're twice as likely to have fatalities at night than we are during the day.
Right.
Because we just don't have the lead time. Storm chasers aren't out there, you know, can see them visually as well. And if people are asleep or in their beds, they're not paying attention to the alerts on TV or radio. So, yes, nighttime tornadoes are by far the most deadly and dangerous.
Bill Cairns, thank you very much. And coverage of the tornado outbreak continues later this hour with reports from two other hard-hit cities in Kentucky. Dawson Springs, a place that one forecaster says now 75% destroyed, and Bowling Green, where the mayor says at least 500 homes are damaged. Those reports coming up at the bottom of the hour. Meantime, right now on Capitol Hill, the January 6th committee is set to hold a vote to punish Mark Meadows for not fully cooperating with their investigation. Meadows was a former chief of staff to President Trump. At first, Meadows did give some documents to the committee and appeared to cooperate, but then he cited executive privilege and decided he would disobey a subpoena to testify. The committee will vote to recommend he face criminal contempt charges. If successful, the motion would then go to the full House floor for approval before the Justice Department can consider the matter. Now, we've seen this once before with Steve Bannon, the one-time presidential advisor who was indicted last month for his refusal to cooperate. Bannon has pleaded not guilty. NBC's Garrett Hake live on Capitol Hill. Garrett, as part of their push, the committee out with new claims about Meadows' actions the day before the Capitol was stormed. Tell us about them.
Yeah, Tyler, the committee doesn't typically reveal the information that they're gathering in their investigation, but in this case, as part of the report to justify this contempt vote tonight, they've revealed some of the documents they've gathered from Mark Meadows that have some very interesting information in them, including an email that Meadows sent to an as yet undisclosed recipient the day before the insurrection, in which he says not to worry that the National Guard would be on site to protect pro-Trump people who might come out. There's also text messages here between Meadows and an unnamed lawmaker talking about a controversial plan to throw out some electoral votes. Meadows tells that lawmaker he loves it. Further, we see other communications, or we are told of other communications between Meadows and lawmakers in various states that the Trump campaign wanted to try to challenge. I talked to one member of the January 6th committee today who told me Meadows is unique. He's right at the nexus between the Trump White House, Trump campaign, and a lot of these activist groups that got involved in the so-called Stop the Steal effort. That is why they are so committed to trying to talk to him and why we're seeing this contempt vote about to play out in this House committee tonight, Tyler.
Garrett, thank you very much. Garrett Haake tonight for us. Major flaw uncovered in software used by big companies tonight. Why the issue has the attention of the Department of Homeland Security. And a warning from the UK. The Prime Minister warning of a tidal wave of cases as a top British health official outlines how fast Omicron is spreading and what it means for America. And states bringing back mask mandates as new data on Omicron emerges. What top researchers are saying about the variant and the vaccines.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The United States on the verge of topping 800,000 deaths from COVID-19, the majority 65 or older. That horrific toll comes as health experts and elected officials are closely tracking the Omicron variant, with some taking action to try and prevent what they fear could be another winter surge. In New York State, a new mask mandate took effect today. Governor Kathy Hochul says everybody will have to mask up in all indoor public places unless they're required to show proof of vaccination. California just announced a similar move starting tomorrow. But other states in the Northeast not following suit. The governors of Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire all say they have no plans to issue new mask rules. Meantime, the UK just reported the world's first known death of a person with the Omicron variant. No details on the person's age, vaccination status, or if they had any underlying conditions. Prime Minister Boris Johnson now urging all eligible adults to get a booster shot.
There is a tidal wave of Omicron coming, and I'm afraid it is now clear that two doses of vaccine are simply not enough to give the level of protection we all need.
In a moment, reporting from Matt Bradley in London, but first to our health and science correspondent, Meg Terrell. Meg, new data out today about how well vaccines stack up against Omicron. You heard Prime Minister Johnson just refer to it. What do we know?
Yeah, Tyler, researchers at Oxford University in the UK looked at how well the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine hold up against Omicron. They specifically looked at levels of antibodies that can block the virus from infecting cells and found, as we've seen in a number of studies now, that two doses don't appear to be enough to prevent infection. Antibody levels from the Pfizer vaccine dropped almost 30-fold against Omicron compared with an older strain, while levels were even lower with the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, dropping below the detectable level in all but one participant, the study showed. But antibody levels are just one way of assessing how well the vaccines may do against Omicron. Late last week, the UK provided the first estimates of their actual effectiveness against the variant based on early cases. While protection is significantly lower against symptomatic disease for both Pfizer and AstraZeneca's shots, a booster dose with the Pfizer vaccine is estimated to restore protection back up to 70 to 75%. Both studies noted it's too early to have strong findings about vaccine protection against severe disease, but it's expected to hold up better than against infection. And even as most of the reports of Omicron so far have been of mild disease, the Oxford researchers warn, quote, it should be noted that higher transmission will inevitably lead to increased numbers of cases and greater burden on health systems, even without proportional changes in severity. So while there is lots of hope that the reports of mild disease continue, public health experts are urging country leaders not to be complacent. Ty?
Meg, thank you very much. Meg Terrell reporting. In London, Prime Minister Boris Johnson says Omicron could become the dominant COVID strain there as soon as tomorrow. NBC's Matt Bradley is there.
Yeah, Tyler, some really troubling developments here. It's got the whole government in what you could call emergency mode. We just heard from Sajid Javid. He's the health secretary here in Britain. He said that the number of Omicron cases is doubling every 2 to 3 days. They already make up about 44% of the total COVID cases here in London. And Sajid Javid has said that he expects that number, he expects that variant to become the dominant one within the next 48 hours. Here's what Mr. Javid had to say today.
But let's assume for a second that it's milder. It will still lead to a high number of hospitalizations. It might be a smaller percentage of people that are severely ill, but it'll be a smaller percentage of a much larger number.
So what are they going to do to fight this? Well, they're trying to resist having to impose new restrictions. Prime Minister Boris Johnson does not want to be, for the second year in a row, the prime minister who ruined Christmas. He's leaning instead on that booster shot, that third shot for most of us, and he's encouraging everyone to get it, and he set a new, very ambitious timeline of basically inoculating the entire adult population by the end of this year. Already, Britain has had a successful vaccination program, but they've only managed to inoculate about 850,000 people in one single day. That was a record. Now, in order to meet this new deadline, they're going to have to do 1 million every single day, starting now until the end of the month. It's a very ambitious idea, Tyler, and it's unclear whether they're going to reach that goal.
Thanks very much. Now, if electric cars are the future, then we will need charging stations, lots of them. Tonight, the new multi-billion dollar plan by the White House to pop them up across the country. Plus, he's loved, he's hated, and now he's Time's Person of the Year. Why the magazine decided to give this guy the title.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back, everybody. The White House rolled out a plan today to push more electric cars on the road. As part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, the Biden administration aims to install 500,000 charging stations for electric vehicles across the country. And the cost? $7.5 billion. Funding that will come from the newly signed $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Today, Vice President Kamala Harris toured an electric vehicle plant in Maryland. She says this plan is a major push towards a greener future. Transportation, of course, the biggest polluter in America, accounting for nearly 30% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Gas-powered cars and trucks, the main driver of that. Meanwhile, Time magazine recognizing one of the pioneers of the electric car movement. Today, the magazine named Tesla CEO Elon Musk as its 2021 Person of the Year. In a profile of him, Time's editor-in-chief wrote, "Few individuals have had more influence than Musk on life on Earth, and potentially life off Earth, too." Phil LeBeau covers autos and airlines for us. Phil, that's some high praise, maybe some forgivable hyperbole from Time magazine.
Sure. And, you know, look, put aside SpaceX. When you look at why Time chose Elon Musk as the Person of the Year, look at what he has done for the automobile industry. It is now mainstream for Americans to consider buying an electric vehicle. Doesn't mean everybody's going to do it, but they're at least talking about it. That is a huge change for this industry, and it has forced every other automaker in the world to spend billions of dollars to say, how do we do this? How do we catch up to where Tesla is at? That speaks to the impact that Elon Musk has had, Tyler.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Phil LeBeau reporting. Up next, a story of the Grinch bots who stole Christmas and the shoppers who decided to join them. Plus, Governor Gavin Newsom trying to take a page out of the Texas playbook. How he plans to mimic their abortion law to target gun makers. And devastation as far as the eye can see. Our live reporting from tornado-ravaged Kentucky continues with the stories of those who barely made it out alive. The Grinch bots who stole Christmas, or at least the presents. Online bots are scooping up this year's hottest gifts before humans ever have a chance to snag them. The so-called Grinch bots are snagging items like the PlayStation 5 in a matter of milliseconds. Sometimes those items then sell online at a higher price. But some shoppers are saying if you can't beat them, join them. CNBC's Courtney Reagan gets to the bottom of the bots.
Grinch bots are computer programs built to search and buy a specific, typically high-demand, low-supply item online, commonly used for hot sneaker drops and gaming consoles like the PlayStation 5.
They work the same way the Tickle Me Elmo ran away 25 years ago, which is moms running around, going to a store, picking up a hot item, either selling it, gifting it.
These bots exist year-round, but are particularly active this time of year. Cloudflare works with retailers to block bots. It detected more than 1.5 trillion Grinch bots at work on Black Friday this year. In many cases, the goods are resold at higher prices on marketplaces, including eBay, Amazon, Facebook, and others. Chris Chan, a self-proclaimed sneakerhead, has paid for bots to help him buy hard-to-nab sneakers. And for Christmas, a PlayStation 5.
Not everyone's into sneakers, but I think everyone during the pandemic and as supply chains have gotten more impacted have had similar experiences across different consumer products where things just sell out so quickly.
Matthew Benz uses bots to buy goods and resell them as a side business. It makes him around $2,000 a month, but it started because bots were beating him to checkout.
That's the whole, like, if you can't beat them, join them thing. And that's kind of what got me into it. And I don't know. I think it can be a long-term thing. I know these retailers, they're doing their best to fight it.
Many websites are trying to prevent bot buying with the CAPTCHA programs, image identifying, limiting cart time, or even requiring a membership to get some products. If shoppers have to pay more for a bot or to buy a product secondhand, retailers lose out, not just on money, but loyalty as well.
Now, anyone can buy a bot. They cost on average between $10 to $400. It can help you get a leg up on the competition or get in front of someone else in line. Fairness, of course, is debatable, but they're available. Tyler.
Courtney, thanks very much. Courtney Reagan. I'm Tyler Matheson in for Shepard Smith. It's half past the hour. Here's what's making the news.
California looking to take a page from the Texas legal playbook and apply key parts of that state's abortion law to gun laws in the Golden State. One cyber expert says it may be the scariest vulnerability he's ever seen. The problem just discovered that puts all of us at risk and why it's not going to be fixed anytime soon. But first, a state of disaster after a series of deadly tornadoes slam into Kentucky.
The city of Dawson Springs among the hardest hit. It is also the hometown of Governor Andy Beshear's father. Families now starting to return to the area to salvage what they can. But many are returning to nothing more than a pile of rubble, their belongings swept away or buried under debris. About 70 miles east, this was the scene yesterday in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Hundreds of homes and buildings destroyed. Rescue crews still searching for missing people there. Reporting from that city in just a moment. But first, to NBC's Ellison Barber, live for us in Dawson Springs. Ellison, you spoke to people on the ground there today. What did they tell you?
You know, one person told us that the only way to describe Dawson Springs right now is devastation. They didn't just lose one home. The entire town, the parts where most people live, most of it has been reduced to rubble. 13 people have died in Dawson Springs. The people who survived, they tell us that they are grateful. They're traumatized by what they went through, devastated for what they lost, but grateful to be alive because they know others in this community did not survive. Listen.
In just seconds, it was over. And so that's the hardest thing probably to get your head wrapped around is that everything is gone so fast. We did lose a few neighbors out back, and that troubles me because I know this one lady especially had to have been so scared.
I am standing in the middle of an apartment community. There are about half a dozen buildings here, all of them completely destroyed, uninhabitable. When I spoke to the coroner for this county this morning, he told us that he hopes the death toll does not rise, but he is afraid that it will, in part because there are people who lived in this apartment community still unaccounted for. Tyler.
Ellison, thank you very much. Ellison Barber reporting. And now to Bowling Green, where officials just raised the death toll from the tornadoes to at least 15. Here's NBC's Dasha Burns.
Tyler, the death count here in Warren County, where Bowling Green is located, is now up to 15. Two of those deaths are infants. One is a four-year-old. There is so much heartbreak and tragedy everywhere you look here as we've been spending the last couple of days here in town. What you see here, big open space cement. This was a garage. It was completely lifted from the foundation. This belongs to a family with two young children. This used to be filled with children's toys. This wagon here, pretty much all that remains. I heard harrowing story after harrowing story from residents here about those moments when they thought, frankly, they might not make it. Take a listen to what one resident told me.
The door got pulled off and I heard the sound. It sounded like a train and I started screaming to my daughter, it's a train, it's a train. And I said, that's the sound, it's a train. That means it's a tornado.
And Tyler, those residents said that those moments felt like an eternity, but in reality, they were just a couple of minutes. But that's what's remarkable. I mean, take a look at the devastation that just a couple of minutes can do. This just shows the force of this thing. And you see here now, folks picking up the pieces, residents, community members, and so many people from outside of town, from outside of the state even, coming here to lend a hand because the task at hand to get all of this cleaned up, to begin to recover, it's a daunting one. Tyler.
That's NBC's Dasha Burns. Now, a weather alert, a powerful storm moving towards Southern California tonight. Forecasters predict some parts could see as much as 5 inches of rain. Over the weekend, the storm slammed Northern California with more than a foot of snow. That's expected to continue throughout the week. On Wednesday, another storm system expected to dump as much as 18 inches of snow in parts of California, Nevada, Colorado, and Oregon. Local officials urging drivers to stay off the roads if they can. Well, cyber criminals have been busy this year, from hacking IT company Kaseya to the Colonial Pipeline. But a new software flaw could be a bigger threat than any hack we've seen so far. That's according to a cybersecurity researcher who told CNBC it's the scariest vulnerability he's seen in two decades. CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers has the details. Eamon?
Hi, Tyler. Look, the effects of this flaw have already been widespread and devastating. The security firm Checkpoint said today it's seeing an astonishing 100 hacks per minute. And although the vast majority of those are likely to be unsuccessful, it shows just how much probing is going on here. The security company Mandiant said Chinese government threat actors are already taking advantage of what amounts to a new backdoor into millions of devices. And cybersecurity expert Dmitry Alperovich predicts a tsunami of ransomware, maybe within days.
This is the most serious vulnerability that I've ever seen in my career because of its broad impact, because of the difficulty in detecting and mitigating the impact of this vulnerability, and because, frankly, how easy it is to leverage it to compromise networks.
The software is called Log4j, and it's designed to take data from an app and store it elsewhere. But a feature added back in 2013 allowed users to send data so the program could execute code. But that also allows attackers to send malware. And last week, users chatting in the video game Minecraft realized just how damaging that can be. Within hours, experts around the globe started to grapple with the enormous implications of what they'd found. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency posted an alert about the flaw on Saturday, warning that the vulnerability poses a severe risk and urging cooperation between the government and the private sector. So, Tyler, now the race is on. Software companies dashing to patch this flaw, even as attackers around the world are frantically trying to use it to break into systems just about everywhere. Back over to you.
Thank you very much. Eamon Javers reporting. The sex trafficking trial of Ghislaine Maxwell set to resume this Thursday. Her defense team expected to call more witnesses than federal prosecutors. As many as 35 witnesses set to take the stand, according to a court filing. That's 11 more than the prosecution called. The defense says that three witnesses have asked to testify under their first name or a pseudonym, but the prosecution opposes that request. Over the past 2 weeks, the jury has heard from several women who claim they were groomed and abused by Ghislaine Maxwell. She has denied all the allegations. California is preparing to use the same controversial tactic as Texas's abortion law to target assault rifle sales. Last week, the Supreme Court ruled Texas's law banning most abortions after 6 weeks could continue for now. It allows private citizens to sue anyone who, quote, aids or abets an abortion after a fetal heartbeat can be detected. But the court also ruled that abortion providers in the state can still proceed with lawsuits challenging that law. Over the weekend, California Governor Newsom said in a statement that he directed staff to draft a similar bill to Texas's that would allow private citizens to sue, quote, anyone who manufactures, distributes, or sells an assault weapon or ghost gun kit or parts in the state of California. CNBC's Valerie Castro dug into the impact and potential implications of this type of law, spreading across the country, even as the legal battle in front of the Supreme Court isn't yet finished. Valerie, welcome.
Tyler, Governor Newsom has heavily criticized the Texas law in the past, but in a twist, he's adopting the idea of essentially deputizing citizens to enforce legislation he believes in. In the statement, the governor went on to say, "I have directed my staff to work with the legislature and the attorney general on a bill that would create a right of action, allowing private citizens to seek injunctive relief and statutory damages of at least $100,000 per violation." And on social media, he added, if Texas can ban abortion and endanger lives, California can ban deadly weapons of war and save lives. But civil rights attorney Ken Belkin says the governor is reacting to a Supreme Court ruling that doesn't address the law as a whole, at least not yet.
They have basically ruled on who can be sued with respect to this type of law, who cannot be sued with respect to this type of law. They have not done, and this is a very important distinction that people need to understand, they have not ruled on the constitutionality of the law as a whole.
Belkin says once they do reach that decision, he believes the Texas law will be struck down as unconstitutional, and any other states like California trying to model other legislation after the idea that private citizens can be used to enforce legislation that violates constitutional rights will eventually find themselves facing the same outcome.
If the state is creating these causes of action, if the state is deputizing these private citizens, the state is acting through its legislation, and it's not going to withstand constitutional muster.
I reached out to the NRA, and a spokesperson issued a statement saying, in part, instead of rightfully focusing his attention on criminal conduct, he, Governor Newsom, continues to harass and demonize law-abiding gun owners. The NRA will fight this bogus effort in the legislature and the courts. And Tyler, the governor has not announced a timeline for when this legislation might be introduced.
It really is a kind of Pandora's box that has been opened by that very unusual Texas law. Valerie, thank you. All right, Americans struggling with rising prices at the grocery store, but what about the cost to farmers long before that food ever hits the shelves? Our Christina Partsenevelis live from a Texas farm with their perspective. And controversy on the ice, a dash for cash competition going viral for all the wrong reasons. Why some critics said it amounted to a real-life American-style Squid Game. The federal government looking to improve its customer service, and that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. President Biden signed an executive order today to streamline more online government services. The administration looking to cut back on bureaucracy and modernize public services like renewing passports, applying for Social Security benefits, or filing taxes. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the actions would take several months to implement. The Twitter account of the leader of the world's largest democracy hacked. Indian officials are investigating how a tweet from Prime Minister Narendra Modi went out to his 73 million followers. It falsely said India adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. The tweet was deleted and the account secured. West Side Story not feeling so pretty or witty at the box office. Steven Spielberg's rave-reviewed remake of the 60-year-old musical off to a slow start, pulling in just $10.5 million in North American ticket sales this weekend. On Wall Street, the Dow down 320 points. The S&P off 43. The NASDAQ off the most of all in percentage terms, 217 points, nearly 3% for the month. Well, bread, meat, veggies, you name it, the prices are going up. But the inflation you're seeing when you shop actually starts way before those products get to the store. It starts here, where farmers plant crops. The average price of the least expensive nitrogen fertilizer is more than double what it was just last year. And when farmers have to pay more for fertilizer, you likely have to pay more for their products. Christina Partsenevelis is live in Del City, Texas, where she spoke with farmers and economists about all of this. Christina.
Yeah, that's right. Fertilizers provide crops with nutrients. This bad boy right behind me sprays it out. And that's why we came to this town, or this, I should say, big, large farm in Del City, to learn more about how fertilizer prices influence food prices. They're skyrocketing, and that leaves a lot of farmers with no choice but to increase prices or pass it on to consumers. Listen to what we had to hear from one farmer, Jay Hill. This farm here makes everything from cotton to grapes, and here's he weighing in on the price of fertilizers.
As we've seen gas prices rise, even, you know, your day-end consumer is seeing more of the pump. We feel that effect here at the farm. Last year, we were purchasing fertilizer for somewhere around $220 a ton, and the last quote I got last week was over $850 a ton.
Nitrogen-based fertilizers are based on two major inputs. You have natural gas as well as coal. And we know prices have been soaring, and there's three major reasons for that. You've got an energy shortage, you've got supply chain issues, and then, of course, you've got export restrictions coming out of China and Russia. So it makes prices a lot more expensive. So much so that fertilizer prices right now are skyrocketing, and 6,000 farmers just last week alone asked the Department of Justice to investigate whether there's any market manipulation. And this comes at a time when there's just so many price headwinds right now because the food price index, according to the United Nations, has hit a level that we haven't seen in 10 years. And experts warn it could get a lot worse.
There's a little bit of lift in corn prices, but I wouldn't say we're fully accounting for what potentially could be big, big changes. You know, I think beef prices will have to inflate higher as feed costs go up. And so I don't think there's any relief around the corner for consumers.
Fertilizer prices or fertilizers pretty much touch almost every single item on your dinner plate. I'm standing in front of a giant tank right now that's fertilizer mixed in with water. So when natural gas and coal and other inputs start to increase, that trickles to fertilizer prices. And then soon, unfortunately, based off the experts we spoke to, that means food prices will soon follow suit. I'll throw it back to you, Tyler.
Christina Partsinevelis, thanks. South Dakota teachers fighting for cash so they can furnish their classrooms. Happened during the halftime show at a junior hockey game in Sioux Falls. $5,000 in $1 bills laid out on a carpet in the middle of the ice rink. Also, teachers could grab and stuff as much cash as possible to buy items for their students. The video went viral over the weekend, with some calling it dehumanizing. According to the National Education Association, teachers in South Dakota make an average salary just under $49,000. That's the second lowest in the nation, behind only Mississippi. A representative of CU Mortgage Direct, which provided the cash, told the Argus Leader the event was, quote, an awesome group thing to do for teachers with everything that has gone on for the past couple of years. The teachers in this area, quote, deserve whatever the heck they can get. Well, have you heard this conspiracy theory? Birds aren't real. They used to be. And it's not just a harmless tweet. Now the kids say the government has replaced birds with robot spies. It's not true, of course, and that's their point. How Gen Z is trying to flip the script on misinformation. Next. Plus, the boy giving shelter dogs a second chance by helping them find their voice.
My name is Marco. I am 3 years old and have been at the Brooklyn shelter since January 24th.
Just moments ago, the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol voted unanimously to seek criminal contempt charges against former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows for defying its subpoena. Meadows had turned over some documents to the committee, but has refused so far to testify, citing executive privilege. The contempt resolution now goes to the full House for a vote, which could come as early as tomorrow. If it passes, it will be referred to the Justice Department for a decision on whether to prosecute. Birds aren't real. That rallying cry has taken wing among younger Americans. Thousands of Gen Zers across the country claim to believe the U.S. government, yes, Uncle Sam, has replaced all birds with look-alike drones being used to spy on the American people. Here's the Birds Aren't Real movement's founder, Peter McIndoe.
I think the evidence is all around us. Birds sit on power lines. We believe they're charging on power lines. We believe that bird poop on cars is, you know, a liquid tracking apparatus.
Now, not buying that the CIA took out billions of birds and replaced them with avian robots? Don't worry, they aren't really doing it either. The group recently told the New York Times that the whole thing is a parody social movement with a purpose. They say that purpose is to use their conspiracy to combat other potentially more harmful ones. Ben Collins joins me now. He's NBC senior news reporter. Ben, welcome. Good to have you with us. Conspiracy being used to combat conspiracy. How does that work?
Well, it works for Gen Z, right? It works in the TikTok generation when you're surrounded by this stuff constantly and want to show everyone else, hold up a mirror, basically. Show everyone else the kind of ludicrous stuff they can come to believe if other people are saying it loud enough. That's what's going on here. You know, the leader here created this movement in part because his parents believed, you know, all of those ridiculous conspiracy theories about, you know, UFOs and stuff too. He was saying, hey, I can just make one up and be as loud as them. We'll see how far this goes.
Yeah, I was hoping that I could stop buying all that bird seed that I put out there, but I guess I can't. The birds are real. The New York Times calls this, by the way, an attempt to upend the rabbit hole with absurdism. Could it work or could it backfire? I mean, there's a possibility that people don't like the government so much that they might really believe it.
Look, in the last, decade of covering InfoWars, I can tell you right now, if it can get dumber, it will get dumber. However, look, they have some allies here who are victims of this. Cameron Caskey, who is a Parkland shooting survivor, loves this. You know, he's a big fan of this movement. You know, it allows him to show other people how ridiculous these people sound. So while it may not be as intuitive as you would think, it is a real line of defense by people who grew up with this. Maybe they have better answers than, you know, old people like us.
The birdies go tweet, tweet, tweet. Ben Collins, thanks. Nearly one in five households across the country adopted a pet during the pandemic. That's according to the ASPCA. But many are still in need of a forever home. And one 11-year-old is helping them find just that. He creates his own version of a late-night show with shelter dogs as guests. They even talk. CNBC's Andrea Day has more.
My name is Marco. I am 3 years old.
Marco the pit bull and his friend Knuckles were living in shelters and in dire need of homes. The person trying to help save their lives, an 11-year-old kid.
There are no bad dogs. There are just good dogs looking for good people.
Evan Bisnoth is a full-time sixth grader. And like most kids his age, he spends a lot of time on his iPad. But he's not just gaming.
Today we're chatting with Kaya.
I draw my mouth moving, so it looks like I'm talking.
He's making videos of the dogs in his local shelter, some with just days left before they're euthanized.
I draw a picture of the dog, so it introduces the dog. And then I'm like, what could make this dog unique?
His love for pups started 2 years ago when he volunteered at shelters in New York City, reading to animals.
You can help them feel comfortable in their environment.
But when COVID stopped the shelter's reading program, Evan found another way to help.
I was looking at my dog, Athena. I was like, what if you could talk? So I made a talk show. I interviewed dogs.
So how's it going?
I'm just having a hard time.
He's here to tell us all about himself.
I'm just a sweet, goofy guy.
So this is Knuckles.
One of his videos caught the eye of Nick Parks, who later adopted Knuckles.
It's really amazing what Evan is doing. I mean, there's no telling how many dogs he has helped.
You can go in the car.
I do know he's the reason we found Knuckles.
Evan's latest video, a senior dog named Lincoln.
The other day I got to meet Lincoln in person, and he's a great dog. A lot of people may not want an old dog, for obvious reasons, but I say let them enjoy their life while they have it, because life is precious.
And so far, Evan's created dozens of videos, and because they've been shared so much online, that's created even more buzz for the shelter. And Evan's mom says, get this, 150 dogs got a second chance at life. They've all been adopted by families. Back to you.
Andrea Day, thank you very much. Well, Jeff Bezos is officially an astronaut, according to the FAA, that despite a previous decision denying the billionaire the honor. Bezos and others like Richard Branson, William Shatner, raced to the edge of space earlier this year. Originally, the FAA decided to give astronaut wings only to those who, quote, demonstrated activities during commercial space flights. Space tourists don't do much, so they didn't count. But on Friday, the FAA backtracked and decided it will end the entire program in January. That means that any space tourists like Michael Strahan before that time will get the wings, and anyone after only gets a mention on the website. We've got 25 seconds left in a race to the finish. More than 100 people still missing in Kentucky after deadly tornadoes ripped through the Midwest. Dozens are dead, and the death toll is expected to climb. President Biden says he plans to tour the damage in Kentucky on Wednesday. And now, you know the news of this Monday, December 13th, 2021. I'm Tyler Matheson, in for Shepard Smith. Have a very pleasant evening.
You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.